Good morning. The Senate Finance Committee will come to order. It's Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. So members, we have two bills on the dock today. Senate file 2786, the nursing home and assisted living bonus provisions, and the plan for this bill is to lay it on the table because we, as of this morning, still do not have the fiscal note on it. But we do have Senator Housley and Senator Abler before us, and welcome to again to the committee. It's great to see you both. So do the bill, and then, of course, we'll go over the fiscal note or some of the fiscal implications. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. It's good to see you. And yes, I will come back once a week to come and hang out with the members of the Finance Committee. I like you people. You give us money. Here we are. Okay. Anyway, Madam Chair, before you is Senate file 2786, and we have all heard of the dire emergency that our long-term care facilities and group homes are in the state. We each have one in our district. We have seniors living amongst us, and we have heard over the course of the last couple of years in COVID that people are leaving the field. It was really, really a tough couple of years for these folks, and they can make more money working at McDonald's or other part-time jobs, that they're leaving the industry. And we had this bill in the other committee, and we did a press conference, and one of the testifiers said, we all got up this morning and we were able to get ourselves out of bed, shower, get ourselves dressed, but at this time, 8:30 on Thursday morning, there are still some folks that are in their bed waiting for somebody to show up to help them get out of bed, and many times they just don't show up. So it's been extremely hard on the caregivers in this arena. And Senator Abler and I put together a long-term care rescue package. This doesn't solve the problem, but this is just a Band-Aid in this emergency situation, because we've heard of long-term care facilities that are closing throughout the state, especially in greater Minnesota, due to staffing. Right now, there are 23,000 open positions in our long-term care facilities. And again, there are people still in their beds waiting for somebody to show up to get them up and dressed. What this bill does, it's a retention and recruiting bill. So there would be, excuse me, retention bonuses of up to $1,000 for each of the workers in these eligible facilities. There would also be hiring bonuses for 1,500 people, which would allow us to hire 20,000 new workers for these places. Also, there's training funds of $1,500 for up to 20,000 new staff, which would include their uniforms, books, and training. And then there's a continuation of the emergency staffing pool funding for these training pools to expand the pool of qualified workers. And then there's also the PACE program. There's funding in here for the PACE program, which we heard last year. It's a model of care that allows seniors with complex medical and social issues to maintain their independence at home. And that, Madam Chair and members, is just a summary of the whole bill and the whole package.
Thank you, Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I appreciate that overview. And Senator Abler.
Well, thanks. Welcome. I appreciate you having us back here. And I had thought that we would be closer to a fiscal note by now, and frankly, that's a frustration for me. It's not raining, Madam Chair. It's not just it's not a hurricane. It's a flood, and we have people being washed away as group homes and other long-term care sites are actually closing and displacing people. We've had hearings about this since September. And on the part of the Senate, in a bipartisan way, I think there's been an urgency in a sense of, like, we've got to do something. And it's just you and me, Madam Chair, so we can talk here, frankly. But I, you know, sometimes you wonder, and I'm a collaborator, you probably know that, but I don't see a will on the part of the governor to do what has to be done here. 10 days ago, we passed off the floor $1 million emergency staffing pool package. It sits in Ways and Means in the House. And, like, I think the governor and the Democrats are kind of on the same side. They could move that out, or we could pass it into law. We were told in September we have to have waivers to get this going, to help the legislature and the governor join together to solve some of the challenges due to COVID. There wasn't language available on that, Madam Chair, till November or December. But we passed it the first thing we could do and to get it going. And so we are trying in the Senate to make a difference on this collapsing crisis in long-term care. And as we've talked with the commissioner and their staff has been good to work with, but they can only work from as the emphasis comes from the top down. And for students of political science, it's the governor who sets the stage, sets the tone for what the different agencies do. And I just don't see it, and I'm so frustrated. So this committee and we've been given $322 million to put toward this crisis. Is it enough? It's enough for the moment. So if we give a $1,000 retention bonus to 200,000 staff, 206,000, that's $206 million just for that. That's how quick the money goes. And so then we've wanted to hire 20,000 people to get into the industry. The governor had a proposal for 1,000. Good for him. Good start. There's some money left for marketing. I can't wait to work with them to build on that marketing program and our 20,000 people and the retention bonuses to keep this industry open so that these individuals who, through no fault of their own, can't dress themselves or need help to be safe, or seniors who have been great people living in Minnesota their whole life that count on us, that we've decided as a social contract to care about them and to help them in their years, the golden years, to get all they to be safe and secure and enjoy their families and be well cared for. And Madam Chair, that is collapsing around us in the same way that the Ukraine is in crisis and more is happening. People rally there. It is time to rally and to make a difference. It's in today's paper. There were about hearings we had and about the crisis in the Tribune. There's an article today. On Friday, tomorrow, 30 beds are closing in the southeast, in kind of your neck of the woods, mm-hmm. Madam Chair. And more are coming. We've had an average of 69 beds closed a year in group homes. We had 59 already this year. The difference in the historic closures and the ones now is there was some place to send people. There was staff around. Mm-hmm. Many places are short 30%. And so it's not raining, Madam Chair. It is like Noah's flood, and we have to create a way to make sure that all the people we have are secure. And so we are working diligently with some of the good staff at DHS. But just to give you an example of why I'm so frustrated. So part of this bill is we're trying to move up the date of the DWRS rate payments. They had a 9% raise, and can we move it up to April? Well, that was impractical. So let's do a rate increase, and then you can get federal match. So $55 million becomes $110 million. Well, that's a good trade-off. Well, that's going to come in November. We wanted to do November or when it's approved, whichever is later. Like, that's unacceptable. Where is the urgency? So then we wanted to give $1,000 per person. If you're working there March 1st, August 31st, you get $1,000. It's not a big bonus, Madam Chair. It costs $206 million, but they're giving $500 to McDonald's workers in my town for kids. So, I mean, and there's more, and some DHS places have $10,000 bonuses in some of the direct care and treatment sites. But it's something. So they're going to start, in the proposed language, they're going to start accepting grant applications in November to get that money out the door. And I don't know, can you say I want my head wants to explode? Is that an appropriate senatorial thing to say? So I'm sorry there's not a fiscal note yet. And so we're working through the policy parts, but that policy drives the fiscal note and the cost. And so I guess, and I just want to, this is not an effort to criticize Commissioner Harpstead. She has been the most engaged, collaborative commissioner. She's been just very high, good at that. So this is not about that, but this is about leadership and the state and what is really important. And I want to work with the governor. I'm waiting for a phone call since a year ago, November, back from the guy. But I would love to talk to him about this. I sent out 15 outreaches. Could you call me? Could we talk about stuff? And like, he's a busy guy. Anyway, so here we are, Madam Chair, with a proposal that is just about ready to be fired up to go to get money out the door to make some difference in stemming the tide of the real crisis we're in. And time's wasting. And there's going to be another group home next week that's going to close down, and one after that. And they're going to put them in nursing homes. And for the fiscal part, you put people from a group home to a nursing home, you go from $1 to $2.
Right.
And you think that $322 million is a lot. Well, add $600. And then to other ways to support the wages and so on, you think $1 billion is a lot. Well, do $2 or $3 billion, and there goes the entire surplus over this crisis. So I commend Senator Housey. I commend the Senate in a bipartisan way for working to get this done. But last year, remember, we had emergency funding that went out the door. Unanimous votes three times out of the Senate. And finally, the other body caught on, and the administration said, oh, we should probably do this. We're willing to lead. We are leading in a collaborative way. Senator Hoffman, by the way, is an honorary author of this, deemed by Senator Housley. So this isn't political. This is just like, let's get it done. So maybe it's early. I just got kind of wound up there. But if you meet some of these folks, we had testimony from a 78-year-old guy. And his son is 53, his wife is 80. And he is at 53, he's in diapers. And he's part-time watching his own son at the age of 78. And he goes like, I will care for him as long as I can, but I'm old. And what am I supposed to do? And my wife is even less capable than me. And what are we supposed to do with our son? And there's people, as Senator Housey mentioned, that cannot get out of bed because they don't have staff. And so, like, well, they'll come eventually. There was one man I knew personally, and he had a staff who was very reliable, who wanted to take a weekend off for the wedding. And the man said, not to worry, I'll be fine. Well, they found him dead on Monday, because nobody came. That's what we're talking about. That's the people, you know, they're as important as anybody is, Madam Chair. So that's what's behind the bill. I really appreciate the cooperation of the committee, the collaboration, the disability community, and Republicans and Democrats together, coming together to address this. But it is time to do something. So with that, I'll stop talking and stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Abler, and thank you, Senator Housley. And before I have questions, I'd just like to say you have every right to be very passionate about this, both of you. And it is not a downpour, it's a tsunami. And we have not even seen the tip of the iceberg on this until we do something drastic. And I've never seen so much passion out of an individual, Senator Abel, because you deeply care about this, and you've been a champion for all the disabled and our long-term care folks, and you too, Senator Housley. And I've never seen you explain the frustration so well, and how we're doing our job. We need cooperation from the other side and across the street. So please help us out. And until you experience a closing in the district that you adore and that you love those people, you really haven't experienced it either. And it's in my area, and they're just barely hanging on in all of greater Minnesota. In the metro, I'm sure there are some issues too, but it is really hitting us hard out in greater Minnesota right now with these closings. And the marketing campaign that you talk about, it's an honorable profession. We need to change this narrative. It's a very honorable profession. And if it's a little money for marketing to attract and retain these folks that are caring for our most vulnerable, then we need to do this. This is why you have a surplus too, is to take care of these needs. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Housley and Senator Abler have been champions for long-term care. So I have some technical questions, and I have seen this bill before. But before we actually officially appropriate the money, in Section 4, long-term care training and education grants, it looks like those grants are front-loaded instead of after we know that the person is employable. So have they passed a background check? Have they completed the coursework? And I don't know how the governor's CNA program how many CNAs it actually produced, but I, you know, yes, we have a surplus, and yes, this is a worthy cause, but I think there should be some balance between attracting people to the profession and just handing out money. What if somebody completes half the coursework, or they complete all the coursework and they can't pass a background check, so they're not actually eligible to work in this field? So I'd be happy to come up with some ideas about how we could protect that money a little bit, make sure it goes to people who are actually going to end up doing the work and not just to entities who want to bring somebody in, say we tried, and then have the program not work.
And Senator Benson, again, we are laying this bill over
yes.
because of the lack of fiscal note, but Senator Senator Abram.
And I appreciate that. There is an amendment. There's actually two amendments that we're not bringing forward today, and they're available. I'm not sure if they're even posted, but because we're just slogging through the fiscal note, and we didn't want to tie the committee up with policy work. We're trying to get the policy resolved. But and so, Senator Benson, you might want to look at the amendment and just see if that's been addressed at all. But the basic idea is, would you please come and do this job? And so the way that the hiring bonus goes, at least the way in my head we do, not November, but so they start working April 1st.
I can't hear anything. Is the microphone not working?
Senator Marty. Oops. Okay. Hold on a second.
I'm not hearing anything either.
We're back.
Senator Abler.
Can you hear me now? That sounds like a
in
commercial.
In person. Senator
oh, thank
Abler.
You.
Thank you.
Anyway, just to start over, so there is an amendment. There's two amendments. One came from the department with some of this November, well, suggestions. I'll be nice about it. And we put that was just separately so people could see what we're trying to slog through. But there is an amendment talking about how we're updating some of the language in the bill. And I can't speak specifically to that, and it's probably beyond the scope of the meeting, but I'll tell you my intention. And so that they get hired April 1st, and then on May 1st, they would get $750. And then when they work five more months, they get the other $750 to try to get them to be incented to come. And the training money is $1,500, which is parallel with that. When the governor's program was accomplished, they spent $1,300 to do a training at Minnesota State and a uniform and a book. Their books, whatever they need. And so I figured in the other $200 would be money for a background study and what their incidental expenses might be. And so certainly we hope they would pass the background check, and I believe most of them would, I hope. But that's the idea. And so if you want to help me sort out the logistics of that, actually I could use your help because with this idea of how do you get the money out the door? I wanted to give it to the employers quickly so they could get it out, just the famous Walls checks. I guess I'm beating him up today. Governor, I'm happy to talk to you. I'm not here just to bash you, but with the checks, it was going to take months to get those out the door, and I didn't want to have months to get out the door. We want to get these right to the employers so they can, like, here's the money, and it's May 1st, here's your extra check, so then they can rely on that as the incentive that will work. So I'm casting about, Madam Chair and Senator Benson, for a way to help that be operationalized, so that would be helpful if you could help me with that.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Abler, I'll be happy to work with you on making sure that we're actually using money to accomplish the goal that you're looking for and in a timely manner.
And Madam Chair,
thank
just
you,
to
Senator
that.
Benson. Senator Abler.
Thanks, sorry to interrupt. And I just want to remind folks where we are. We're in the original body of origin at the Finance Committee on the way out the door. If this was a conference committee, we would be much more concerned about the specific, is it totally operationalized? But I think we want to make it clear that the Senate bipartisanly wants to put $322 million into the industry to salvage it from, you know, ruin. And we want to get that collaborative process going sooner than later. And so we may not get every bit resolved on the way off the floor, but as this gets resolved, absolutely, Madam Chair, it has to work and it has to be functional. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Abler. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate these ideas and these proposals and the sense of urgency, because we all know it's there. And we all have various levels of personal experience with these issues. I think Madam Chair, you were talking about issues in your community. I'm hearing the exact same things in mine. I'll tell you a story. I have a constituent who is like a regional manager, supervisor of a number of group homes, and you know, talks about the challenges of trying to keep staff when there are higher wages at other businesses. And for example, talking about the news yesterday, Target has announced that they will raise its minimum wage as high as $24 per hour this year, depending on the market. How do our group homes compete with that? And then there, I think of another constituent who worked in one of those group homes. Now, she was at retirement age herself, but she was continuing to do this work because she cared so deeply. She had to work overtime because they couldn't keep fully staffed. So she had to work overtime to take care of the residents. And she just couldn't keep doing it at that stage of her life. And so I bring those up because those stories come from like 8 years ago. So the pandemic took systems that we had in our society that were held together with Band-Aids and staples and paper clips, because we were not addressing them adequately way before anybody thought about a pandemic. And it blew it up. And it broke childcare, it broke issues in our schools, it has broken all kinds of caregiving, and that's just the short list. Now, I am all for incentives. I love the training and the recruitment. Let's remove any barrier for anybody who wants to work in these important critical fields. And let's do this, and let's do this with urgency. But Senator Housley, you said this is a Band-Aid for an emergency situation. You're right, this is a Band-Aid. And Senator Rosen, you talked about we have a surplus. We need to get to the underlying issues of this. And we're kidding ourselves if we think that this is going to fix what has been a long-term issue. I have another constituent, they're in their 70s. They have a daughter who is in her 40s who was born with a severe disability, and her home is closing. And they don't know what to do because they can't care for her. So we need to all roll up our sleeves and take this seriously, not just for the important short-term solutions that we need, but for long-term systemic fixes. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Canton. I hope we can rely on you on maybe some influence across the street and in the House to get the bill that we passed off bipartisan last week or 2 weeks ago for our temporary staffing pool. We need to get that done. That's a mandatory. Senator Marty.
Thank you. Senator Kent said a lot of what I wanted to say. She said it very articulately, and that is that COVID made all these things worse, but I think we have to wake up to the fact that all of our caregiving professions, the ones we as human beings should value the most, the ones who take care of our little kids, the ones who take care of people with disabilities, the ones who take care of seniors, people who really care, these are highly dignified jobs, even if the work is considered messy sometimes and very personal. But it's the most important things we as humans can do, and we're paying these folks wages that they can't afford to make ends meet. And I strongly support the move that this bill is doing to give people some bonuses and help them along the way. But the bottom line is this is a structural problem. Our PCAs, our child care program folks, they're all getting way too little in pay. And this is the time, well, you know, we can't really afford this. You know, we can't afford it. Well, I mean, look at the budget numbers. This is the one time we could step up and say, let's really do it. So I want to applaud what this bill is trying to do. But again, I'll second that it's not going to fix it. And the fact that I think there have been a lot of reports from some of the nursing homes that the bonuses help a little bit, but people don't stay around because they're still not making ends meet and it's still not good enough. So, yes, I will second that, the importance of this bill, and say it is of a Band-Aid approach to a huge, huge societal change we have to make. And if we punt on it this year when we have the surplus and we don't use that in a way that's going to address this, then we're going to be back the same thing next year and 2 years later. And as the population ages, it's going to be a lot worse 5-10 years from now. So I want to applaud the direction of this, but also say we've got a lot more to do.
Thank you, Senator Marty. And I'll put the same pitch into you as I did Senator Kent. We need help getting this across the front line. And I see Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Abler or Housley, can you give me an approximate total number in the state of these beds? I mean, I've got nursing homes that are shutting wings down that were at one time probably 85 to 90% full. And they don't have the staff, so they're just closing off wings. Do we have a number like that?
Senator Housley.
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's around 40,000 beds.
I'm sorry?
It's 40,000.
Madam Chair.
Senator Abler.
But a number that's, you know, and we don't, I mean, that's just a number. We're trying to figure out, anyway, but I don't know the exact number, and maybe that's a good number. But I do know that the testimony has been that they're occupied at 60 to 65%. So COVID, because people didn't want to work and they didn't want to go anywhere anyway, so they drop down and they get paid based upon occupied beds, not on unoccupied beds. We pay for absent childcare days, but not absent nursing home days. And so they're at 60 to 65% now as they're rebuilding, they're at 60 to 65% because they can't open up any beds. And so that's the challenge, and you really can't operate those places very well, and the group homes as well. They're chronic. They're 30% understaffed. They have people sleeping. We've had testimony after testimony in our committee. People working 12s, sleeping in the basement, coming back to work another 12. And supervisors that are now doing the cares part is also trying to run the place, and they're just getting burned out. They're like, I'm out of here. So that's the challenge.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just Senator one comment. It would be really, really nice if the governor were to get off square one here. And I don't know if there's any one of the 67 of us that don't believe that we should take care of those that have taken care of us for so many years. It's now our time to take care of them. It's not that hard. So let's go, Governor. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Lopez Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to repeat what my colleagues have said about the need for more, and I will support this bill, but I'm not going to take a victory lap once it passes, because we all know that this doesn't do enough, frankly, not just for these workers in nursing homes and other assisted living scenarios. I visited many during my time in the legislature, being a member of the Health and Human Services Committee. And the last one I visited was just this fall, right before session. And the facility I went to was in the brink of closure back then. They were competing against another facility across the street that was increasing wages from $15 to $20. And now we have notices of Target, my former employer, who's lifting wages up to $24, $25 or more an hour to work in their stores. Every job is of value to our economy. In this case, if we value these workers, we want to increase their wages and not give a bonus, one-time bonus. And there's existing workers there in these facilities that have given their entire career to this industry, and they love this work, and they've sacrificed so much during the pandemic. I've talked to some of them who would drive hours in a bus and then go to work and minimal sleep. They don't sleep in the basement. They go back on that bus, go home, and come back to the detriment of their own health, making up for these gaps in workforce. And those stories are real. I heard them myself. And doing a one-time bonus for folks that are coming into the industry is not, you know, it's a fix for one time, but it's not keeping these workers longer term, and it's going to take a wage increase, a rate increase, and we all know that. So I just hope that, you know, we talk about, at least I've heard it from the other side as early as this week when the forecast came up to $9.2 billion, that we don't want to pick winners and losers. That's what I heard from the Republican side. And yes, we don't want to make this issue partisan, because we all have elderly family members. We all have grandmas and grandpas. We all have someone that we know that has a disability that needs support. And we are picking winners and losers here because there's people, we talked yesterday on the bill on nursing, how we have a workforce shortage there, people leaving the industry, capable of working but don't feel valued. And value comes with compensation, quite frankly. We pay for what we get. If we want good workers, we need to pay them well and train them well and support them and give them good benefits. This bill doesn't do that. And again, I will support it, but I'm not going to take a victory lap. We have so much work to do. You all know this. Senator Benson, as chair of Health and Human Services, Senator Abler, I respect you so much on the work you're trying to do here. But I wish we did more. I wish this was the vehicle that we could do more. On the issue of childcare, these are all tied. If we can't find childcare, those workers can't go to work to take care of our elderly. And I heard that at the nursing home, at the assisted living facility. So if we're going to deal with this comprehensively, we have to take care of the workers in the system that allow people to go to work to begin with. So again, why does frontline worker pay such an important aspect of this? Because we are addressing them holistically, not just one sector of the industry. And yeah, we could do this really quickly. My understanding is there's a House offer to Senator Miller to move quickly on these issues. We're just doing one piece here, and I wish we could do more, that we could actually value all the workers that need the support, because childcare is part of it, and nurses are part of it. So members, I think we have this unique opportunity, and we're missing it. We're really missing it, and I hope that we can work together to fix that, and I know that Senator Abler understands that, and Senator Benson understands that, and I know you, Senator Housley, and Chair, Madam Chair, you do too. So let's work together and make sure that this is not just one piece that's going to exacerbate another area. Because if people don't have childcare supports, these workers are primarily women, single moms, if we look at the data, who do this work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lopez-Ranzen. Are there any other questions? With that, as I said, yeah, Senator Abler, closing comments.
Yeah,
of course, this is coming forward again.
Once you close, and I'll do something.
Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Abler. You know, when you run for office and you think about the reasons that you want to come here, you're a small business owner or taxes are too high, this bill right here is it. When we can help people in an emergency situation. This is it. Like we said earlier, folks are not able to get out of bed. Nobody is there. People are dying because nobody is showing up. This is why we have this position and why we run for office. When these emergency situations come up, we need to help. And you're right, Senator Rosen. We need help from the House, and we need help from the governor to get this across the finish line. So thank you so much for hearing it, and thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Senator Abler.
Well, and I really appreciate that, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for the discussion, and to the public who's watching. They actually think that we can figure out some of this stuff. They don't know the nuances like we do, but they know they care about their mom or their neighbor, Larry, who's got the disability challenges and tragically had a brain injury, and now he's just needing a lot of help. And so they figure we can solve all this, and I think we can. And the tone of this hearing has been, I think, really remarkable, and I commend everybody on both sides of the aisle for being so concerned, and I know that everybody means that. And so for me, we're going to keep working on this, but I want to, I guess that I'm talking to the governor today. In the governor's supplemental budget, I actually have a copy of the amount of money and the programming he put in place for handling the issues of future wages for PCAs. Last year, if you remember, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars setting up a PCA framework, a home health framework, elderly waiver rate and wage increases. We were so proud to get people to earn $15, and suddenly that's nothing. It's like it just happened overnight. But so in the governor's supplemental budget, the first one that came out, this is the proposal that he has to handle the long-term issues. I asked the department. They said, well, there's really nothing there. And so, Governor, you know, maybe you and I can stand together on the steps of the Capitol and when to your new supplemental budget, point out how we are going to handle this together and how we're going to decide that seniors and people with disabilities and all the workers and childcare and all that matters as we kind of collaborate here. So I'm here, and this committee is eager. We got a ton of leading, very senior members of both parties eager and willing to do this. And so I'm all in, Madam Chair, and this has been, I think, a tremendous hearing. So thank you for the time, and thank you for the Minnesotans who give of their wealth and their poorness to chip in their dollars to make all these programs happy. Capable of taking care of the people we care about. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Blair, to both of you. And very good hearing, very eloquent words, very much a passionate subject and delivery. And I hope you have some good news for us at the end of the day with a phone call. So with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Senate File 2786 is laid on the table. Senator Dipple, so good to see you in person. Thank you for being here. We have Senate File 2676, the Southwest Light Rail Review. And I did get a text from Senator Newman this morning at 6:10 saying how he's supportive of the bill and there's an amendment that he supports. So I'm very excited to. I read the OLA report. I did do that. And, Senator Dipple, before we get to the amendment, would you like to do your review?
Sure. And Madam Chair, I'm not sure. I've learned a little bit more about the amendment since it was an amendment coming from the House side, so I'll just explain that in a moment and see if the committee wants to take it or not.
And members, the fiscal note is in your packet. It's kind of a strange fiscal note. $200,000, and it's not. There isn't anything on here.
Madam Chair, I can speak to that if
yes. So, Mr. Naum.
So the fiscal note identifies the costs that are required to accomplish an action in the bill, and there is language in the assumptions that describes what the OLA would do. And I'm sure that the legislative auditor can speak to that if you'd like her to. But fundamentally, it's not on the front page because it's not a required appropriation. That said, they would take additional actions if the money were provided.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Senator Dipple.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Mr. Nauman. I was a little perplexed. I said, after 20 years, and I still don't understand fiscal notes sometimes. So.
Yeah, join the club.
So I appreciate that. So thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to present Senate File 2676. And what brings us to this bill, and the reason we have it and I'm presenting it, is because of a response to both previous and more recent announcements by the Metropolitan Council about cost increases and delays to Southwest Light Rail Transit. Last year, as an earlier increase / delay was coming to light, there was some growing indication that maybe much, if not most, of the costs were a function of management and oversight issues. That created a great deal of urgency and no small amount of alarm on the part of myself, my counterpart in the other body, the public, and a number of other individuals. So we asked the Office of the Legislative Auditor to conduct a special review, which they agreed to take a look at that request, and they did so. They quickly determined that effort was probably a little larger than what a special review actually constitutes and might be beyond their staffing level, their resources, some of their capacity and expertise. But in so doing, some important information was found in the initial information gathering phase, which you can see in the memo that you just referred to. That's a part of your packet and that's posted on the committee website. The concerns that initial round of information gathering raised included, what are the actual costs that the change orders should warrant? Should there be better negotiation Should there be better expertise at the table in figuring and making some of these determinations? Is there sufficient oversight and ability to really stay on top of what the contractors are actually doing in real time? Are some of the change order requests being acted upon before they have actually been approved? Are they actually reflective of things that have already happened? And what kinds of things actually have implication for the schedule, for the critical path of the overall schedule? And maybe what was most surprising was some concern that was being articulated with this independent oversight entity around the quality of the construction that was being completed out in the field. The situation for that particular contractor to the Met Council, who's responsible with the objective oversight and analysis and advice, the concern rose to the level of their actually requesting disclaimer statements to be placed on the documents that go forward from the Met Council staff to the entities and the individuals who actually make the decisions around these change orders, such that they needed to protect both their professional reputation and their legal liability. So, you know, what do we know? We're just legislators. People tell us stuff. And so we ask the legislative auditor, who has more ability, to take the deeper dive and look at the actual documents and surface the evidence to give us some indication of what was really going on. And so we asked for that special review, which couldn't happen. And so then we thought, well, we'll just go through the regular process, you know, when we come back to the legislature, of engaging with the Audit Commission, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and the like, to do kind of the larger program evaluation process. But we thought we would put it into statutory, in the form of a statutory request, just to really, because we thought there was sufficient, a sufficient number of issues and sufficient level of interest to really put it in front of us as a very public conversation. Not really knowing if we were going to proceed with legislation or just go through the normal process, and having conversation with the leaders of the Audit Commission, the auditor themselves, we are kind of doing a hybrid of that, which is moving forward with this kind of legislative request, if you will, to the commission, to the legislative auditor, and also setting forth some ideas that we have about what are some of the elements of the analysis. And so it's structured in a way that gives a lot of leeway to the commission, to the auditor, to structure the inquiry, investigation, analysis, whatever you want to call it, and also be able to maybe parcel some of the smaller questions out that we could benefit from more immediate information that would come back to us that we could maybe take action on, or, you know, would be informative to people who are in a position to make decisions about how best to move forward on the construction project itself, protecting oversight and accountability and the taxpayer dollar, et cetera. That seemed to be a good way to proceed, and I know that the conversation has ensued between the commission and the auditor. Additionally, we have included a $200,000 appropriation from the general fund. Should the the auditor herself will speak about it in a moment about what that might be used for and how that might be useful, et cetera. So, Madam Chair, if you review the bill, you can see it's kind of permissive language, if you will, and then it goes into some specificity around some of the elements that we think might be a good idea to analyze. I think there are 17 of those. It has some language around protecting those who cooperate with the investigation, their identity and their security, so that they feel comfortable fully cooperating with the fullness of their knowledge and their professional expertise, and then the appropriation. That's the bill, and I can pause now and respond to questions, or we could go to the legislative auditor, or we can discuss the amendment, whatever you wish.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble, and we do have Ms. Randall from the Office of Legislative Auditor. Senator Dibble, I'm going to call an audible here, and I think we are in recess.
Oh. You too.
Members. are back in order. So, members, we have the A5 amendment before us, and it is posted, and it should be in front of you. It is posted, right. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A5 amendment, and Senator, if I could, I'd like to amend the amendment.
Senator Pratt moves the A5 amendment. Senator Pratt to the amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the amendment requires the Metropolitan Council to report back to the chairs of transportation and the ranking minority members. I would like to add a new number one that would, so number one would now be total expenditures on the project during the previous 6 months as compared to projections, and then renumber the existing requirements accordingly.
Okay. Mr. Botter?
Madam Chair, if it'll help, I can restate the amendment. As I understand it, I think Senator Pratt's description was very clear. So, and these are the changes he will incorporate in the amendment. On page 1, line 8, after the semicolon, insert a new clause 1 that reads, total expenditures on the project during the previous 6 months as compared to the project. Is that correct?
Two projections.
And with instructions to renumber the remaining clauses.
Okay. Senator Dibble, to the amended A5 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I accept and support the Pratt oral amendment. I think it's a good amendment. The A5 itself, just to let members know where it came from,
right.
It came to me last night from my counterpart in the House. It was being offered by the minority lead in the House, and my counterpart, Representative Hornstein, was inclined to take it. It's a good thing to know what the total expenditures of the project are to be anticipated, you know, change in deadlines. Now with the addition of the Pratt language, what have been the expenditures most recently as contrasted with what has been projected. But just to let you know, so this is all well and fine. At that time, we didn't know, but now we do, because they have the early posting requirements in the House, that this actually, it turns out, was a little bit of a bait and switch, a little bit of a bridge, because now they're going to be on the floor today in the House, and this amendment is going to be amended many, many, many times with some, a whole variety of ideas that I wouldn't necessarily support. So that's just the context. That being said, so that everyone understands where it comes from, I do support the A5. I think it's a good thing for us to have this information, and comfortable with accepting it as amended by Senator Pratt.
Okay, thank you, Senator Dibble. Any questions to the amendment and to the amended? Okay. With that, Senator Pratt renews his amendment on his motion on the amended A5 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amended amendment is adopted. And Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair and members, thank you. It's my understanding that there is an interest in broadening the appropriation in the base bill and extending the time frame in which the money is available. So, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'll just walk through what those changes would be, beginning on the base bill itself, the second engrossment, page 3, line 21. So the proposal is to, again, make the money broader so they can be used for a little bit for more than just the language in this particular requirement. So line 3.21, strike conducted pursuant, and then continuing on line 3.22 to section 21. That would come out of the bill. And the following language would be inserted: related to the Metropolitan Council or light rail construction. And then to make the funds available for a longer period of time, on line 3.23, strike 2023 and insert 2025. So this would provide an additional 2 years on the maturation of the funds.
Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
I will move the amendment as described by Mr. Nauman.
Senator Benson moves the oral amendment. And before we take a vote, Senator Dipple, and then we'll have Ms. Randall give her discussion and explain it if you're okay with that amendment too. Senator Dipple.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the amendment. I think it's a good idea, both to make the use of the funds and by extension the nature of the inquiry slightly more, possibly more broad, more flexible, and also to allow a greater period of time for the funds to be expended. I think this is a good change. I support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm legislative auditor. Thank you for hearing today's bill. I just want to reassure all of you that we take the problems with Southwest Light Rail very seriously. We are very concerned about it. We have already initiated a special review inquiry on our own authority. We have sent a letter to the Met Council asking for answers to a large number of questions, and we're expecting a response later this month. So I can just assure you that we are already taking action related to the concerns outlined in this bill. And we also, through the Legislative Audit Commission process, we had our evaluation subcommittee first meeting earlier this week. Senator Kiffmeyer is the chair of that committee. And Southwest Light Rail, as a possible program evaluation, has been moved forward and is still under consideration as outlined in this bill. Related to the amendment for the funding, we appreciate the flexibility that that amendment provides. I think there are longstanding concerns around the Met Council and Light Rail, and so the new language would allow us to do some continued inquiries into those issues. So we're comfortable with the bill. We really appreciate Senator Dibble and other members working with us to give us both the flexibility to scope the work and also to protect the prerogative of the Legislative Audit Commission in directing our program evaluations. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. Are there any questions for Ms. Randall or we are on the oral amendment at this time? Okay, so Senator Benson renews her motion on the oral amendment. Mr. Nauman, would you like to explain that one more time? Just go through that one more time.
Yes, Madam Chair. Again, this is on the second engrossment of Senate File 2676. The proposal is to amend the appropriation language to make the funds, to provide more flexibility for the legislative auditor to use those funds in special reviews for the Metropolitan Council or light rail construction. So on line 3.21 and 3.22, delete the clause conducted pursuant to section 1 and insert related to the Metropolitan Council or to light rail construction. And then to extend the availability of the funds on line 3.23, deleting 2023 and insert 2025, which adds an additional 2 years on the maturation of the funds.
Wonderful. Okay, with that, on Senator Benson's oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay, just as a reminder too, I think I know Senator Kiffmeyer, I might not have turned in my OLA requests, but I think I still can. So I know the Southwest Light Rail is on that request and I'm gonna do it today.
You're good, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. With that, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate file 2676 do pass as amended and be referred to general orders.
Thank you. Senator Dibble, final comments before we take that one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the motion, Senator Pratt. Thank you also for your co-authorship of the bill. I'll also thank my other co-author, Senator Newman, who I think you mentioned earlier is watching from home, and maybe if he's a nerd, he is. And
he's listening for sure.
You know Senator that. Senator Rest and Senator Osmick also. The governor has indicated that he's supportive of this, as well as the leadership of the Met Council is supportive. They say they have nothing to hide, which is great. Mm-hmm. I think we have a lot to learn. Just by way of, you know, my perspective, I am extremely vexed by this project, as folks might have figured out from my other past public statements in this body and in the media. And I come to this, though, but as a supporter of transit improvements, mobility, what people need in their lives, what our region needs to be successful. And I think if we fail to exercise our due diligence and our oversight responsibility, those things that I support are threatened. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Nice work. No other further questions. Senator Pratt renews his motion on the amended Senate file 2676. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed nay. Motion prevails. The bill passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much, Senator Dibble. Members, next week we're actually going to meet three times. Tuesday we have the February forecast. Wednesday we have the Senator Dame Senate file 3472, the reinsurance bill, and Senator Goggins bill 3003, which is the Prairie Island extension bill. And then on Thursday we're going to have Senator Tomasoni's Senate file 3372, which is the ALS bill. Any questions, comments? We're all good. Thank you very much. Senate Finance Committee is adjourned.